It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah, all right, here we go. Friday. Fun. Maybe not at football facilities in town where they were dealt some news today. We'll get into that. Jeff Parles, Cofield, Golden Circle Sports Bar. James is back at our Finley Toyota Studios. Mateo's helping us out here inside Treasure Island where parking is free. Crowds are building. For all those folks who want to keep saying Vegas is dead, I think it's slowed down, but it ain't dead. Last week was a little bit slow. I'll tell you what, though, Christmas Eve, I don't know if you what you did on Christmas Eve. We came down to the Strip. Oh, Lordy, was it packed. Packed. Like freaking, we'll get his mic up, like freaking gridlock all over the boulevard.
Christmas Eve was Crab Legs Day.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Went great. It was delicious.
Again, how'd you cook it?
So, we do them in the oven. Yep. We got about just shy of 2 pounds from Costco, which was basically powered our whole week.
Nice.
And basically, you put them in the oven, you baste them in the garlic butter, and it was absolutely delicious.
I love it. Yeah. That's good.
That was good.
We're going to...
I'm not quite as good as McMillan's meal, which was absolutely outstanding.
We'll find out in about 15 what Mark prepared, and I know Mark wants to react to big news at one of the football facilities here in town. I don't think it's shocking news for the people inside the organization, but UNLV appears to be without a starting quarterback, as Anthony Calandria, a few hours ago, it was reported that he's going into the transfer portal. This is after he told Paloma at Fox 5 and others, I think it was a couple Mondays back, that he was going to stay. He didn't want to go into the transfer portal, and a lot of us looked at it with a little bit of cynicism because it was a bit of an early announcement before things really get heated up. So he's going in. We'll have more on this. Dan Mullen said a couple interesting things on Tuesday after the bowl game, which they lost. They didn't look like the same team, so I don't know if they were distracted. I don't know if Calandria was distracted. But there's a lot on UNLV football coming up later on in the middle of the show. Meanwhile, while we've got, I don't know what Calandria is, 22 years old, we've got a 22-year-old changing his mind. I don't mind it that much because I think he made a rash, quick decision in announcing that he was going to stay, but people need quarterbacks, and this is a former Power 4 quarterback who just won the Conference Offensive Player of the Year, so I'm sure his offers are north of, I don't know, just a guess would be north of $750,000 for next year, which it could go a lot higher than that. And this is something we talked about probably about 2 weeks ago. I'll explain again what we were saying about designating certain amounts of budget when you're at Group of Five for certain players. Now, that said, he's 22. The fact that Max Crosby got into it with the Raiders today, we don't have all the details here, but the details we do have are from Jay Glazer. Max Crosby, according to Glazer, Raiders told Crosby they want to shut him down the last two games. Crosby, who's played with injuries for much of the year, vehemently disagreed and has left the building, NFL and Fox has learned. This could lead to questions on his future in Vegas. I'm going to say right out of the gate, if this is true what he wrote here, I wasn't in the meeting. So I don't know if it got really, really heated. I don't know why Max Crosby would leave the building. I think that's counterproductive. That sounds like Derek Carr nonsense. When Carr tried to make this whole thing that he was getting benched for the last two games into a deal about him, I don't like it. But I want more details, but I don't like it.
Here's what Pete Carroll said.
I like them shutting him down. I'll tell you that, though.
Yeah.
I'm all on board on that, and I know the players don't like that. But sometimes there are different goals. And listen, we know Max Crosby wants to play, but there are times it's not in the plans.
So Pete hit the podium a little bit earlier, not very long ago, like in the last 20 minutes.
I wanted to do the show on Christmas Eve, and I wasn't allowed to. I didn't storm out all mad. I'm kidding. I didn't care if I did it on Christmas Eve or today, but that's the equivalent. Like, you know what? I guess it's not a competition. I don't know. As if you use it as stealing money, keep going. So Pete Carroll said,
after an evaluation of Crosby's of the knee, just looked too bad. He didn't want to take the news like that. He knows he's banged up. He said, I'd like to get out of here. And I, Pete Carroll, said, yeah, get out of here. So he took off.
Okay, well, that sounds like a mutual agreement.
Yeah, that does.
Let me read Jay Glazer again.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the way Glaze wrote it. Crosby, who's played with injuries for much of the year, vehemently disagreed and has left the building. I guess I need to know, left the building and everyone was happy, or left the building incensed and pissed off because he vehemently disagreed.
Homage to Elvis. Very nice. Very nice.
Also
done
says this
town.
Could lead to questions on his future in Vegas. That's very suggestive.
Well, I think there was going to be questions on his future in Vegas regardless of if he was
shut
down.
No, this could lead to it.
Well,
Jeff,
I still think
could lead to it.
But going back to what you just said a moment ago, though, Cofield, this is 100% the correct move from the Raiders because, first off, this game that's going to happen on Sunday is setting up to be I said it on Monday with JVT. By the way, apparently John has never been to an NFL game before. Which
I didn't know that.
Which I didn't know until Monday, and he may go on Sunday for his first ever game, which in all honesty, he may be starting at the Pinnacle. Because this is setting up to be a once-in-a-lifetime game where you have two teams on 9-game losing streaks. If I read the tweet correctly earlier, that it's the first time in NFL history where you have two teams playing each other on a 9-game losing streak or longer going into it, which... perfect confluence of events for this. But for the Raiders, like, you already shut down Bowers this week, who was banged up for months, and Crosby has clearly not been healthy for 2 months. And even from a, like, forget the tanking aspect of this, where it's, hey, I don't know if it's genuine tanking, but it's a nice little massage to make sure that the right result happens here with where the Raiders would be picking if they lose these last two games, which, by the way, if Kansas City puts an effort like they did last night against Denver, the Raiders should be okay with next week, which I was genuinely concerned.
By the way, the Raiders should be allowed to do anything they want. I saw one of the comments on Glazer's post here. Someone said NFLPA should enjoy this one. Well, the NFLPA should enjoy a lot of them. We know what's going on.
Well, I mean, the Giants basically, they put all their good, other than the good defensive linemen, all their guys are, I mean, they have no offensive line this week.
You know, we're going to do a lot more on Max Crosby, and we want to find out more about his behavior here and what the disagreement was. I think we know the basic disagreement. But something I was thinking about a couple days ago, and this idea has been floated in the NBA. The NFL gives us Christmas Day games,
yeah,
which, frankly, I could take or leave. Right? I love Christmas. I don't need to watch NFL games. The NBA had the day. Whatever. If they want to compete and crush the NBA, you can do it. You know the league doesn't like tanking. No league does.
No.
Right? Why couldn't there be a competition at the end of the year for draft picks?
So you want to put what? You want to do, how many teams do you want? Do you want a?
Oh, you tell me. What's the best idea?
You want a 4-team playoff at the end, and
so two extra games?
I mean, that's the problem.
Or is a tiebreaker win by margin?
Win by margin. So we're going back to the 90s then.
You know what? You want the number one pick, and you're the worst team. Try in the last game, kick the crap out of the 4 seed. I mean, beat the hell out of them, and you get the number one pick. Try, and then this way you wouldn't have a guy. If you did it for 2 weeks, you'd prevent this nonsense in week 17. I don't know what. I guess you'd have a consolation. The losers would play the consolation game the following week.
Yeah, there's just not like that. That's the issue. It's just not like a good system, and also too like, unlike in the NBA, where again I'm not bothered by this. I'm more bothered by what Philadelphia did, where they legitimately didn't try for 4 years, and then of course it never worked for the six. We're talking about the Sixers, of course, but on an NFL scale, like there's only 17 games, the average career span for these guys is insanely short. Like, I'm okay with seeing guys who wouldn't necessarily play games actually get reps and see if they can win a job for the 2026 season or whatever season's up next. I don't have an issue with it. The funniest result for this Sunday would be if this game somehow ends in a tie, which would be not quite what if the Raiders and Chargers a few years ago had ended in a tie that they both make the playoffs, but it would be pretty funny if this game managed to end in a tie. By the way, I think the Giants.
I want to discuss this more.
Okay, please.
But I would like to see the NFL start to do something. I mean, I think the tanking is funny, but I got to tell you, if I'm a fan and I had season tickets, I'd be pissed.
Oh, you're
like, I lose a game or two every year because my team, for, you know, for, in the Raiders case, it's like 4 to 5 years they're making a run at, you know, less than 6 wins, and basically you don't want them to win down the stretch. It's just antithetical to all competition. And I get it. Like, I'm not upset that the Raiders are going to try not to win, but wouldn't it be cool down the stretch if they actually had some incentive to win? Like, try, get Geno Smith out there, play everyone. Max gets to be happy. You don't have to shut down Bowers at 80%. Let's do some kind of tournament. Why not? Coming up, we'll talk to Mark McMillan, former NFL player with the Eagles and the Chiefs and several other teams, and also get into the NFL with him. I'm going to tell you the topic. And also, he was very upset, not like mad at the kid, but he really likes Anthony Calandre, and it looks like the UNLV quarterback is on his way out of the program in the portal.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling towards week 17 in the National Football League. Jeff Parles is here. It's Cofield. Here is the Golden Circle Sports Bar. We're checking out some bowl games. Tomorrow's an incredible day for bowl games. Will they be good games? I don't know. There's going to be seven of them. Right now we're watching Mountain West Loyalist New Mexico play in their bowl game. They're taking on Minnesota. We'll get to the topic of UNLV potentially losing its quarterback, Anthony Calandria, going into the transfer portal about a week removed from saying, hey, I'm not going to the portal, I'm going to stay. I would dial it down on the mean stuff. I saw some nasty stuff, like, the kid lied. Things change. People change their mind. To me, there's a guy out there who never had changed. He didn't. Let me speak English. He never changed his mind. Kyle Whittingham wanted to keep coaching at Utah.
Sure did.
And I think it's becoming more and more clear that for some reason, Utah decided it was time to move on, that coach in waiting needed to get the job in Morgan Scalley. I've heard more and more about a very troubled about 10-day period before the season when they were trying to figure things out as to the plan, right? Because to my recollection, it was never really announced, right, that we knew about coach in waiting a couple of years ago, but it was never really announced before the year that Whittingham was gone, right?
No, it happened the week before their final game.
Okay.
Basically.
Because I get confused with what I'm told sometimes, and I'm like, wait, was it already out there?
No, so it wasn't out there.
I'm under the impression he got a gigantic pay boost to shut the hell up, basically. Because I think he was complaining, and he was a problem, but I don't know the story from both sides with what Utah was so dead set on. So I've heard, like, he was difficult to deal with. Now, was he difficult to deal with because his ego's out of control? Are there things he's doing in the program that actually been covered up nicely by all his assistants? Or is he just trouble to deal with because he's like, yeah, I don't want to quit. I'm not ready to go. And, boy, talk about motivation for a coach who's basically been pushed out to go 10-2. And it was funny today, because to jump to the story here, it looks like he's got a done deal, a five-year deal with Michigan.
It is done.
Kyle Whittingham's going to go to Michigan after being pushed out by Utah. And I saw a note today, some jabroni kid wrote up something for SI, because that's what they have. They have a lot of folks who are not really in the media yet. And the person wrote, Whittingham's got a defensive background. He's got to bring someone in to make sure they have a good offense. I'm like, they just scored 39 points a game.
Yeah.
They had two quarterbacks who were unbelievable. The backup actually was unbelievable. The starter was hurt, and Dampier didn't have the greatest year. But their offense was great. They're a locomotive. But back to the story at hand, what in God's name happened at Utah where this legendary coach got pushed out and now he's landing at Michigan?
Well, remember just 10 days ago when we were talking about, well, again, because Utah's obviously coming here to play on New Year's Eve against Nebraska, but you know.
But can I jump in for
a
second?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I have a conversation with Matt Rhule that I did a couple of days ago because I was working on getting both Las Vegas Bowl coaches, right? Why not? We're here. We're the radio station, along with our other great stations, in Vegas. So let's get both coaches on. And I've gotten no response about Whittingham.
Well, that makes sense now.
And some of the other days, like, man, I guess Whittingham's being difficult. And I thought about it this morning when I saw the news. I'm like, hey, Freddie doesn't want to come on. I have to talk about his Michigan job.
Yeah.
Like, now he's in a weird position. Keep going about what exactly happened this year.
Well, it just, when Whittingham said that he was like a guy in the portal 10 days ago.
Or weird. About, weird.
That the alarm bells were ringing in my head of like, oh, someone's going to hire Kyle Whittingham in next year's cycle. Like, some big-time school is going to hire him. Now, obviously, then the Sharon Moore stuff happened. And, look, for Michigan, I don't know how you can, unless if you were going to get DeBoer from Alabama, but as soon as they beat Oklahoma, that was out the window. You could not do any better than Kyle Whittingham. And more importantly, Cofield, from what we know publicly, and again, who knows what happened behind the scenes based off of what you're saying, it's hard to find a better guy to clean up the mess that has been the Michigan football program with everything off the field the last 5+ years. So I think this is a home run for everybody. Home run for Whittingham, home run for Michigan. Big Ten's had a really good coaching cycle this offseason when it's all said and done. And for Utah, look, you better hope Morgan Scalley's good. Like, that's all it is. Like, I don't know how, in theory, that should be an easier place to win in the new Big 12. They have all this private equity money coming in as well, which who the heck knows what will come from that. Maybe Whittingham didn't want to deal with that at all also. That's also possible.
Yeah, maybe they knew that this PE thing was on the way.
Yeah.
And they were already getting bad signs, like he's not going to be cooperative.
Yeah, so that's also possible.
All his money coming in and ceding control.
Well, and also keep in mind, the Big Ten wanted to put all that private equity money in, and who were the two schools that were like, now we're not doing this? USC and Michigan. So, look, I think I don't openly get surprised by things anymore, Cofield, just in the landscape of what we are as a society as a whole at this point. But when I saw that break this morning, it was a wow. I'm stunned that Whittingham is going right from Utah to Michigan, and that Michigan actually did this right. Now, my questions of Whittingham at this point, because even though they went 10-2, I think he's somewhat lost his big time fastball over the last few years, but they still went 10-2. And they lost to Texas Tech, who's a monster, and they lost a coin flip game to their biggest rival in Provo. So they're a coin flip away from having a chance, what BYU did, a chance of beating Texas Tech in Arlington for being in the college football playoff this year.
I'm going to say it's a solid hire, but I will not say it's a great hire until we get someone on from who covers Utah.
That's fair. That's fine.
Because I want to see what's going on. Because behind the scenes, more people than not have kind of taking the side of Utah, which
okay.
that gets alarm bells going for me.
Yeah, that's fair. Who knows? Maybe Crumble Cookie shook him so bad with keeping Sataki in town.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but it is an insane development. Again, the Utah coach who was retiring and riding off into the sunset and getting all these pats on the back about, oh, what a great way to go out in your own terms. Well, apparently they weren't his own terms. He was being pushed out, wasn't happy that he was out, and now this unbelievable job opportunity opens up, and he is a good match for it.
Yeah.
You would think if he runs a clean ship and if he's still working as hard as he used to work, just throwing it out there.
Well, that's, again, I think the first thing's the most important thing. Like, yeah. that program is in such shambles with everything that does not have to do with football that getting that in order first, that, like, let's say Whittingham has his job for 6 years, okay? Or the length of his contract's 5 years. Let's just say he runs the length of his contract. He'll be 70 years old by the time the contract it technically would expire. If they're back on the right foot and they're making a college football playoff basically every other year, or basically not quite, they're not going to be Ohio State, but you get what I'm saying. Like, you make the college football playoff every other year at Michigan, you're ahead of Penn State, you're in pretty good shape there.
These are crazy times, man. I'm just thinking about the other people at Michigan. Big Biff. And what he's been saying lately, he's a character.
Oh, we knew that already.
A lot of the Michigan fans had really high hopes of stealing someone, basically, to make a lateral move. But you knew it was not going to be easy for someone to pull someone from their roots who's got equity, is comfortable, is making $5 million plus, has cooperation from the president on down, and most importantly, doesn't have to go in and do a cleaning project around the program.
Well, that's the biggest thing. The cleaning project around the program is really, to me, the biggest thing more than anything else. Like, you're Michigan. Like, once you get that clean, you're going to win 10 games pretty much every year. So, we'll see how it goes. Again, I really do think he has lost his fastball a little bit over the last few years. But, again, they just won, like you said, basically 40 points a game in 10-2 this past year. Yep. Like one of the quietest 10-2s for a power conference team we've ever seen. But they were really good. And still, they won that game where they gave up 900 rushing yards to Kansas State, which is still eating at me this few months past now.
We're going to hit the betting window with Sam Peniatovich in about 20 minutes, 15 minutes, give or take a few mins. But on the way back, we'll follow up on the news with Calandria. Have a couple of comments from Dan Mullen pre Calandra going into the transfer portal as moving and shaking's going on all around college football.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So we got bowl action right now in Zona. Is this Guaranteed Rate? Is that who the sponsor is? It's just Rake Bowl. 7-6, Minnesota on top of New Mexico. Minnesota with the ball at about their own 36-yard line. Reminder tomorrow, throw the flag right here at the Golden Circle Sports Bar inside Treasure Island. We'll do a lot more recap of UNLV's football season, which ended with a Frisco Bowl loss. Bizarre game. We'll break down the game here in just a second. But here's a quickie combo that I had with Dan Mullen after the game. Apologize, the audio was going to go in and out a little bit, depending on how the mic was picking up. But listen, about 3 minutes in, when Mullen drops in that he hopes Anthony Calandria comes back. And at the time when I was talking to him, I was like, okay, all right. So there was healthy cynicism about that commit last week with Calandria. If you missed it, Calandria is going into the transfer portal, so the UNLV quarterback is going to test the market. But here's Dan Mullen talking about the loss against Ohio and what he thought about it.
No, obviously that didn't end the way we wanted to, but I'm thankful for the buy-in of everybody. You know, I mean, this was a whole new operation, right? I mean, you had almost everybody was brand new starting in January. You have a new head coach, you have a new program, you have over 70-some transfers and new players coming in. And, so I'm proud of the guys to buy in and what they tried to do and to go accomplish what we had with all of these new faces. I know that we've been successful, but that team was gone. This was a whole new team. One, but more importantly, two, is the guys that stuck it out. You know, the guys that have been here for 4 or 5 years, leaving the program in a different place than they found it, I think is very, very special. Appreciative of that. And they just take a lot of pride. I think people's view on UNLV, certainly people's view on UNLV football, certainly people's view on football in this college football in the city of Las Vegas is very different than it was when Marshall McDuffie and some of those guys showed up a couple years ago. It's a very different view on all of it. You know, and I've been here 1 year, so I told those guys, they've been through three coaches. So it's not the coaching, it's them. They're the ones that made this difference, and they have a lot to be proud of. So, but then we also have the guys coming back next year, you know, and we'll be a very, very, we'll be a different team. It'll be a different operation. Year two for me, things will be run differently, a little bit differently in year two than it was in year one. And, so our guys coming back got to be ready to work.
You look at this game, you mentioned maybe the sizzle wasn't there at the beginning of the game. Even come out for the second half, what do you think it was in terms of playing fast and being ready?
Yeah, you give them credit. That's on me. We weren't playing at the speed we needed to play. We didn't execute. We let them control the tempo of the game, which I think as you saw, if you're watching, we're standing at the line of scrimmage with the clock roll down to one on the play clock, snap the ball with one on the play clock. You know what I mean? Both teams under 60 plays. That was what they wanted. Talk about coming in that we had to play the lead so they couldn't, you know, all of a sudden they had to press. It would have been a very, you know, a different game. And I think they were able to really just take all the juice and energy out of the game and slow it way down. And credit to them for following their plan to get that done.
I have a question about the offseason. This is a different build this time around, and you do have a lot of young guys with the portal and everything. Do you expect to have, you know, 35, 40 guys to build with?
Oh, so you got guys like Cade McGee walking by right here that I think people saw flashes of. You give him a year to develop in the system. I think we have some really good young talent on this team to build around. I think there's some excitement about the future of what's going to happen. So, you know, but we'll see. You know, like you said, and it's a different world of college football. I'm hoping we have a great foundation of guys that come back. We'll find out here over the next couple of weeks. But I think there's going to be really high expectations outside the building from our students, our alumni, our fans in the city of Las Vegas. And that's the type of program you want to be a part of.
Last one, you had a long conversation walking down here with Anthony Calandria after the game. He took a lot of the blame on himself. So what'd you tell him?
Well, that, you know, I mean, hey, it's not. It's a long season. He, you know, we won a lot of the games because of what he was able to do this year. He's got such a great future. Hopefully it's with us. And, you know, and he comes back for another year to come play with us. And I think that'd be fantastic. I know I think that'd be great for the team, for the city, for everybody. And I think great for him, you know, another year in a program running the system. He'll be at another higher level. And you know, sometimes you that stuff just happens. You know what I mean? We didn't have our best night. You know, that's what happens.
They did not have their best night. They didn't look really well prepared. And there was no sizzle from the get-go. And, you know, I'm walking the sidelines doing the sideline reporting, and the energy level was lower than most of the games. And I could see Calandria was really frustrated with some of the mistakes he was making. He dropped the ball on the carpet a couple times, got officially credited with one fumble, threw an INT, just a poorly thrown ball, didn't see the extra coverage. There were a lot of balls that weren't really on target. And then the defense played okay at times. They gave up way too many big runs on weird plays, too, where the Ohio running back would kind of jam into the line and then just kind of run in place to wait to see if something opened, and then no one wrapped him, and then he would bust out outside for a long run. So it was just one of those games that was way off. But obviously the story of the game now is Calandria didn't play well. As I referenced in the interview there, when I was walking down the hallway from the press conference, Mullen and Calandria were talking for like a good 2 minutes. Calandria had his hood up, so I couldn't read lips. I can't anyway. But that was interesting that he said on Tuesday that, hey, hopefully he comes back. Because they must have known that there were offers already coming in. I'm sure he voiced it to the coach. So a little different vibe than we thought going in, because he had made a commitment, you know, just a few days ago, last week, to coming back. But, you know, things change. I'm sure there's a lot of programs out there with coaches who have their jobs on the line, and a guy who's got Power 4 experience, just had a really good year, could come in and at the right price could help fix your program.
Well, and also too, you have so many new coaches in the power conferences as well this go around that makes a lot of sense. And look, it is what it is at this point. It's college football in 2025, especially when you're not in a power conference. It's just going to be the nature of the beast, and it's going to be hard. It's harder to compete when you're probably going up against a seven-figure offer, which is realistically what Calandria is going to have. He's probably going to have like a low 1.1 something in that pocket from one of these power conference schools.
More on this in the 5 o'clock hour. Anthony Calandria, UNLV starting quarterback in the portal, what their QB room looks like, who the players might possibly be, and I'm talking about schools reaching into the portal to try to make offers, or reaching to him before he even got in the portal to make offers to Calandria. So he's probably on his way out at UNLV, and I saw someone tweet out that you know, if someone stepped up and gave the money, I don't think that's the deal here. I don't think it's that they're way short on money. I think they have a budget, and it's about how much you're going to spend on your quarterback. Coming up in less than 5 minutes, Sam Paniadovich will find out what he's got in terms of leans and likes this weekend, and I'm not so sure that the Seahawks are going to be completely focused and don't have a kind of a dump out game here against the Panthers. We'll see what Sammy P.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's do it on this Friday. We talked to Sam Paniadovich from Chicken Dinner Podcast, SP Shoot up on Twitter. It's Parles, it's Cofield. What's up, Sam?
How do we not start with 2-13 New York and 2-13 Las Vegas? What a doozy.
Let's do it, man. The Tank Bowl, and apparently it has Max Crosby all pissed off.
Yeah, but they're still betting the Raiders, which, you know, you do see from time to time, because I think wise guys sort of view these two teams as identicals for the most part, maybe a point or two off. But wise guys don't really love laying points with horrible teams, so that's probably what it is. We did see a move on Vegas, despite the news about Crosby. Giants were 2.5, and now they're 1.5, so a little bit of money on the Raiders.
Sam, this is, we were talking a little bit earlier, this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime game, isn't it, where you have two teams, nine-game losing streak for both of them, first time in NFL history that's happened, where both teams are coming in on a nine-game losing streak or more. It really is a once-in-a-lifer game.
They're just horrendous football teams, and that's the truth. There's no real way around that. I think the question I have internally is, I mean, obviously they could get to 41. I'm looking at the totals right now in Vegas, 40.5, 41. It's obviously possible. It's a football game. Anything can happen. But, like, what's the path to 41, 42 points in this game? I think more times than not, it's an under game. The problem is with teams like this and offenses like this, you could always get a pick six. You could always get a fumble touchdown. I mean, these are bad offenses. But, I mean, when you close your eyes and think about the final score, I'm more in the 17-13 range than I am in the, you know, 21-20 range or 24-20 range. I lean to the under, I think.
I'm in the same boat as you, but the possibility of multiple defensive touchdowns in this game scares me. But, hey, if you lose because of that, so be it. Sam, going to earlier in the day on Sunday, I want to go to the Browns and the Steelers. It's quite possible the Steelers will have the AFC North wrapped up by about 11 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow night because the Ravens are an underdog against Malik Willis and the Green Bay Packers. What do you like in this Cleveland-Pittsburgh game? We're looking at a field goal right now in this one.
I jumped on here. I'll be completely transparent with you. I got a phone call. Obviously, we're all, you know, celebrating the holidays and Christmas and all that. I got a phone call on Tuesday night. My buddy goes, hey, we're about to bet the Browns. And I was out. I was out drinking. I missed it. It was 4.5. And you look at the board now, and it's 3. So now the Steelers only favored by 3 on the road. That's not a good sign for the Steelers, number one. I mean, the market is basically saying the Browns are very live to win the game, to knock that from 4.5 to 3. So I missed that bet. But I still bet it at 3 because I think what you just alluded to is very, very important. This game could mean nothing for the Steelers, at which point this game is maybe a pick 'em. Pitt -1 potentially. I feel like if you bet that Browns side now at +3, which you can find readily available, it's not going to go the other way. So it either closes 3 or you roll the dice and maybe it closes Pittsburgh 1, maybe pick 'em. It feels like a good opportunity, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I would say so there, Sam, especially, again, I think Baltimore is going to lose tomorrow night. So, like you said, could be completely meaningless for the Steelers. Let's go to another game that's in an early window. Carolina, there is a path they could clinch the division if they win and Miami beats Tampa in an upset. But here we go again. Panthers, a huge home underdog against an NFC West power, this time getting a whole 7 against the Seahawks coming off that crazy win last Thursday against the Rams.
Number feels a little high. I make the game about 5, so you bake in 2 points for perception. And, of course, the last time we saw Seattle, they were beating the Rams on Thursday night, going for 2 in overtime, going for the kill, getting it done, stamping the envelope. You know, people remember that. A lot of NFL bettors bet on what they've saw or seen last, rather. And that's the peak of their season, beating the Rams, prime time. Now you got to go on the road. Carolina is not a great team, but they're feisty. People want to lay 7. You notice that number hasn't come off 7, though, man. I mean, most of the tickets, you talk to these guys in Vegas, it's all Seattle. Oh, Seattle this, Seattle that, Seattle money line parlay. It's all Seahawks, but it's still 7. So that's always a little eye-opening in my world. And I did jump on some Carolina +7. I mean, if the Seahawks were a stock right now, this is not the time to buy. If you ask somebody at Christmas, you ask your uncle, what do you think? Oh, Seattle's good enough to win it all. You're like, all right, fade, bet against.
Sammy P is with us here on ESPN Las Vegas. Are you staying away from Chargers, Texans? Are sharps on it? What's the story in this game? Chargers won.
There's nothing there, really. I mean, look, I think there's always going to be a faction of people that like to back Harbaugh. In a role like this, you know, where he's a small favorite or a small dog, you know, like the coin flip games, people love Harbaugh and Jim's made people a lot of money over the years. So there's a gravitation for some groups that I know that will bet the Chargers a lot of times in this situation. But I personally have nothing there. It's difficult for me, like, to really feel strongly about these games, week 17, week 18, because they're just, like, so many variables, and, you know, some teams are banged up. I mean, the Chargers, even though I just told you wise guys like Harbaugh, like, wise guys do not love the Chargers' offensive line. And if you're going to handicap this game from an X's and O's standpoint, like, the best matchup is the Texans' pass rush against the Chargers' O-line, or lack thereof. I mean, they're down 3 starters. But people do love Harbaugh generally in this role, for sure.
You want to lay 13.5 with the Pats against the Jets?
I'd rather drink the stuff under the sink than lay 13.5 points on the road in the NFL. I was talking to Felica, who's, by the way, vacationing in Turks and Caicos right now. Good for him, huh? What a life. He's on the Jets, +13.5. So I can share that with you. As I said, I would rather take the bleach than bet that one.
Bills are now one against the Eagles. Obviously, both teams have certainly a motivation.
Yeah, I look, I mean, people are shorting the Bills all year. You know, I've been fighting these people on the internet for 6 weeks now that don't like Buffalo. And, you know, first it was they're never going to beat the Chiefs. And then, oh, well, Burrow's coming back. And, oh, well, Lamar maybe gets healthy. And now I'm hearing, like, oh, well, if Jacksonville plays, but stop. Like, you're all just haters on the Buffalo thing. Look, they could lose to Philly, of course, because Philly's got a pretty good defensive front. And I think they can negate a lot of the Josh Allen run stuff. I was a little surprised, though, Steve, to see Buffalo go from 3-1. That's a cheap Bills money line now, by the way, boys and girls. So if you want to lay $1.15 or $1.20, I don't hate it. But you know me, Steve. I just have Bills futures. Like I it's like Pringles. Like I pop the top and I can't stop betting the Bills to win the whole thing.
Sammy P is with us here on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. All right. Aside from fighting people on the internet, you've been talking a lot of food up there, so. Was there some sort of movement recently over the last week or so, a discussion of the reverse sear? Because I saw a lot of pictures you were getting of the reverse sear.
We did talk about it on one of our shows. This would have been a couple months ago. And Joe was talking about how he made a steak for his son. And I said, oh, like, that's interesting. I go, you don't ever do the reverse sear. And he goes, no. He goes, I hit it on the top, like on the skillet, and then I throw it in the oven. And I said, well, I think it's better to do it the other way, because I had a chef tell me that there's something with the moisture if you do it in the oven first. And we do it, like, when we do a steak at home now, we do 275 in the oven for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then finish it on the skillet on top of the stove. And Joe tried it and was like, my son loved it. My son wants you to cook all his food now. I'm like, well, we can't do that. So then we have, like, listeners that are now doing the reverse sear. I mean, we go back a long time. So do Jeff and I, but we've talked food for years. Yeah. The reverse sear, I think, is the best way to do a steak.
I like it. I like it with the super hot skillet. I like a lot. I saw you post on Twitter about working out all year and that you were going to say the hell with it. You know what? You're in good shape. You went for a Portillo's hot dog. Did you actually get the chocolate cake shake?
I did. I also,
yeah, there we go.
Nobody's listening, right? Are we in the trust tree? Nobody's listening right now. I went to the dentist. This is how bad it is. I'm so fat right now, guys. I mean, it's just six days of just unnecessary eating and drinking. So I go to the dentist. Dentist appointment's at like 3:00. I walk out of there. They pick me dry, you know, clean everything, you know, floss, all that. I go out of the dentist and I stop and get a milkshake right out of the gate, you know, like, I mean, it's a pride. Yesterday, I had two dinners on Christmas. Like, who do I think I am?
So awesome. Fat boy December. We're all doing it. Okay, back to fighting on the internet. I saw some person, something, wanting to know from you, how are they begging to have people bet Alabama, eighth-ranked team, against number one? Promise y'all say anything, I promise y'all say anything. Can you explain this to the audience? You were talking about the number between Indiana and Alabama, and that the books are looking to get some Alabama money, right?
Well, I leaned into it a little bit. I mean, the books aren't, like, trying to trap you, but I think fundamentally when you ask the average bear, okay, Alabama's playing Indiana, and Indiana's favored by 7, people would think you're crazy, because everybody, when they hear the term Alabama, they think of Nick Saban and national championship teams, and I just don't think that team is this good. And clearly they're not, because, again, Indiana is – a 7-point favorite over Alabama. That is not a typo. That is the way the cookie crumbles on this. And look, Alabama is just a very one-dimensional team. You know, I mean, you can give them credit for coming back from 17-0, but I give full blame in that game to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's up 17-0. Bama can't run the ball. The game, it should be over. You're at home in a playoff game. Like, how do you blow that lead? And the Bama guys are like, oh, well, that's what Alabama does. And it's like, all right, chill out. Like, that's not what happened. Oklahoma shot itself in the foot multiple times. But look, this Bama team can't run. They had like 40 or 50 rushing yards in the game against Oklahoma. And they don't really get to the passer that much. It's not a very disruptive defensive line. Indiana, guys, is a complete team. I mean, on offense and defense, they are better than Alabama. And if Vegas is going to hang 6.5, 7, the bets are going to come in on the dog. Because most people, whether they admit it or not, are going to look up at the board and see Alabama catching 7 against Indiana and think it's a layup. And when that's the case, it's usually not the case.
Sam, I just want to ask you about one more quarterfinal, because I know this has been a polarizing game with the Bear Best podcast. Oregon is up to 2 in most spots against Texas Tech. I feel like I'm on a complete island with the Red Raiders being the wrong dog in this game. What are your thoughts on that one early morning for us on the West Coast in the Orange Bowl?
So I have to be honest, I did bet Tech 12-1 to win the whole thing a couple weeks ago. And when Indiana beat Ohio State, I was very excited because that moved Ohio State to the other side of the bracket, right? Like, I wouldn't have to face Ohio State until the final now. So that's why the price has come down, because the math has gotten better. Biased, of course, I like Tech. I mean, I think they should be favored. I make the game Tech -1, so if you're going to give me 2, yeah, I'm in.
Sam, we'll go to the baseball stadium next. The weather looks like it could potentially be a total whiteout in New York for this game. Clemson and Penn State in the Pinstripe Bowl.
Oh, I didn't even know the forecast. That's terrifying. We are betting Clemson, and we have bet Clemson. So I think, Steve, you and I talked about this game last week. Clemson got bet from 3 to 5, 5.5 initially. And then Dabo came out and said, oh, 26 scholarship guys are out. So then the line naturally crashed back. But I tell you now, there's going to be some stuff at Penn State tomorrow. Like, you're going to find out an hour before kickoff that a lot of guys aren't going to play. And that's wink, wink, hush, hush. I mean, look, James Franklin still has his hand in the frickin' cookie jar there. He's actively trying to bring, like, 20 guys to Virginia Tech. And, you know, to his point, if you're going to transfer, why would you play? Well, a lot of that news isn't public yet. So we are banking on there to be some news at Penn State. I've heard rumors of, like, 4 offensive linemen not playing, a bunch of guys opting out. So at 2.5, if you lay that, you laid a better number than we did, and we laid a ton of 3.
Last one in terms of motivation and who's going to play. Are Sharps betting against Michigan? Texas is now 8.5 against Michigan. That's a Citrus Bowl on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, they laid it early. So that was the Sharon Moore news, of course. What a guy that is, huh? Different topic for a different day, maybe. But once that news came out, that thing got blasted, 5.5 to 7. But there was another push in the last, you know, 3 days or so. They laid 7, 7.5. There's some 8.5 now in the market. And here's what's possible. What happens if Bryce Underwood's leaving Michigan? And we don't find that out until a day or two before the game. I mean, what's the number then if he doesn't play? 10, 11? This could easily be. I mean, you wouldn't be surprised one bit if you looked up and you saw Texas 35-10.
It's crazy. It makes these games almost impossible to bet until the very last minute.
Yeah, it's tough, guys. It really is, because then the other shoe always drops.
Sammy, appreciate it. By the way, the Elmo's wings, were those Cajun on the right, the ones that were charred up a bit?
The Elmo's rings. Oh, the wings. Wings. Yeah, no, yeah, that yeah, was yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a Cajun. Yep, a spiced Cajun, and they charred. Oh, it was so, man.
That was good. Okay, good, good. I like the report. Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, boys. See ya.
That did sound like Elmo's rings. Onion rings. The onion rings at a place called Elmo's. Yeah, Elmo's is a place in Buffalo. This bowl season has become very odd. And I'm one that will defend college football and what's going on right now to the hilt, but it's gotten really weird. And with the transfer portal on January 2nd, I mean, yeah, if you're playing a game, and especially a meaningless game that's not part of the CFP, like, what the hell is your roster going to look like? We don't know until the very end.